Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
The right hand puts him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On Talk Sport.
Welcome to the TalkSport Fight Night podcast. I'm Gareth A. Davies. I was joined this week by Spencer Oliver. And of course, it was Fright Night as well as Fight Night. Well, joining us first on the podcast this week in a stacked show was Tyson Fury's trainer, Sugar Hill Steward. Here's what he had to tell me about the situation where they had offered him and Tyson Fury to train Anthony Joshua for his next fight. The rematch with Alexander Usyk.
We haven't spoken to you live on air about Tyson's performance against Deontay Wilder in the third fight. Give us your assessment of the night.
I thought it was a great fight. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was everything that boxing has to offer. And that fight did a lot for boxing, I believe, in a whole sport, because the heavyweight division. It's the division that runs boxing, and when the heavyweight division is thriving, boxing is thriving. So now, this here just changed the landscape of boxing, period. You know, that fight just meant a lot, and the performances by both fighters were great. You know, they were great performances. You had you showed courage, heart, determination. You showed everything that boxing has to offer in that fight for both opponents. And for Tyson's performance was great. He had to get up off the canvas. He had to make adjustments. Boxing is all about adjustments. He had to make an adjustment, and he went on to dominate the fight and to be victorious by an 11th round knockout. You know, the big dogs get the knockouts in the late round. But Tyson Fury's a big dog.
Everyone's trying to stay calm in the third round when Deontay Wilder's gone down. But in the fourth round, you see Tyson go down twice. Your eyes are on him. You're watching his posture, all those things. You kind of know he's okay because we knew he was okay and he was getting through it. What goes on in the corner then when you're preparing to speak to him in that minute? What were you going through from the end of the fourth into the fifth round?
Everything was easy for me. I don't want to say it's not the easiest thing, but it's something that, you know, I've been around and doing my whole life watching Emmanuel. So I know it's something, a situation Emmanuel wouldn't panic in. It's nothing that I would panic in. And my main concern was just his breathing. Make sure he breathes good so he can go back out to the next round and be just as dominant as he was before that knockdown in that fourth round. And that was my main concern, was just to get his breath together so he can be on, you know, he can have good, smooth breathing and be conscious of everything that's going on and take back control of the fight. That was it. I never forget a time Jonathan Banks fought Eliseo Castillo in New York, and I worked the corner with Emmanuel, and Jonathan was knocked down two times in like the second round. Bad knockdowns. The third one was a slip. They could have called it a knockdown. The fight would have been over. But I never forget coming back to the corner when Emmanuel told Jonathan Banks. I mean, this was a bad round pretty much, but you know, Emmanuel, and I was thinking the same thing because he made it through that round. I was thinking to myself like, all right, that was a good round. And Emmanuel gets in the corner with Jonathan, and he goes, all right, Jonathan, good round. I mean, amazing. We're thinking and saying the same thing. And it's a good round because that fighter survived that round. There's no need to go into a panic and make the fighter do something. That he made one mistake. It's just not to make that mistake again, but to continue to do what you've been doing to be successful. And that was the only thing going through my head was just, okay, that was a good round. He survived that round. Now, just get your breathing. Let's go back out to the next round, and let's not make that same mistake. That's all. Just slight, small little correction. And that what was that's what was done, which led Tyson Fury to being dominant in the fifth round, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, and finally finishing it in the 11th round.
It's an extraordinary character, isn't he, Tyson Fury? I mean, I had the fortune to come to the after party and then come to the Wet Republic the day after for the pool party. And he's an incredibly modest individual, isn't he? Weirdly, Tyson. He obviously, he does his performance bits and he thanked you as well, obviously, at the press conference for the work. He couldn't have done it without you. But he's not someone that kind of crows about his own performances. He's quite an extraordinary individual. You know him very well. He's quite an extraordinary individual, really, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know, saying that, Gareth, it makes me think about it. Like, I get asked a question a lot, like, after the first fight me and Tyson had together, when everybody's saying, oh, it's Sugar, it's you, you changed him, you did this, what a job, masterful. And I that's why I say a lot of things, I mean, me and him are so similar, because I never once can look at myself and be honest and say, yeah, it was me, I take all the credit for it. Because if he doesn't do what I tell him to do, we're not even talking about this at all. It's not even the same thing. So it's for me, I've always said it's 50-50. So that's why we're the dynamic duo. It's not just one person. It takes both of us, and we both give credit to each other because we know without each other, we both wouldn't be where we are right now, you know. I mean, I would still have champions and trained them or whatever, and he would still be, you know, champion and been champion and things. But to be on the level that we are now, it takes both of us, you know, to be on that level together. So we both respectfully respect each other in that sense to know that, you know, it's both of us and not just one. You know, even though a lot of people say that the fighter is in there by himself, but I mean, if you ever see me in the locker room, I'm warming up just like the fighter, moving around, throwing punches, slipping, going through certain things in my head that I know I'm going to see in the fight. And, you know, those kind of things right there are what, you know, what makes us, what I feel like is, you know, is very rare in the sport of boxing, or any sport really, dynamic duo. I don't even know if there's any dynamic duo in the sport out there besides us.
Obviously, the fallout from it all is that we've seen what happened with Deontay White. He's the Otto Valen fight is off, and White is now really pressing for a fight with Tyson Fury, you know, sometime next year. Anthony Joshua's pushing ahead with his rematch with Alexander Usyk. Two things, finally. Do you think that the White fight is likely next year?
Yes, and yes. Yes, we will coach Anthony Joshua. Yes.
Oh, you will coach Anthony Joshua.
I didn't hit him out on purpose, but yeah. Yes, we'll help Anthony Joshua. And yes, we don't care if we fight Dillian White. Doesn't matter. No, go on with your question, guys. I'm sorry.
No, exactly those two things. And will you actually help Anthony Joshua? Do you think that's genuine?
Yeah, it is. I mean, look at this situation here. You have any other sport, right? You've got basketball. You got football, soccer, American football. You got guys that are friends or just, you know, very competitive champions. And you see now people put together teams. They're putting together dream teams and things like that, like as far as basketball, football, any other sport. You know, these guys are joining up with each other, being on the same team, to be successful. So here I don't see anything different than that. I mean, you think of boxing as a competitive sport, but these fighters don't be hating each other. You know, it's they want to win. They want to be involved in the biggest fights in history. You know, they want to make money as well, too. So, I mean, I don't see anything strange about this situation. You know, you help. I mean, as the Crunk Gym used to be, you had champions training with champions, working with each other, helping each other to compete and to win championships. And at some point in time, those guys weren't always a part of the Crunk Gym, and they had to fight each other. And that's just what it is. You go through amateurs and you sparring with guys, fighting with guys, and you have to go out there and fight them in a tournament. So it's no different on the bigger stage. It's just that the concept has been drawn away from, you know, drawn away a lot because I don't want to say people are afraid, but just the lack of knowledge of how this thing really works and how it's been working for years. It's no different on the professional level. If we can help that man out to win his fight, and then those two can come back and fight each other for, I mean, what's wrong with that?
Well, after Sugar Hill Stewart, and what an amazing conversation that was about the situation in the heavyweight division. Do any of you really believe that Sugar Hill Stewart and Tyson Fury could possibly be in Anthony Joshua's camp? I'm not so sure about it, but anyway, fascinating stuff. Well, joining us next on the show was Archie Sharp, fresh off his victory the night before at the York Hall Bethnal Green, and he had to listen to a few words from Shekka Stevenson.
The art of the boxer is hit and not get hit, and I displayed that last night. I think the last couple of fights I've been getting out with cuts and marks all over my face, where I was getting myself drawn in headbutts and clashes and just getting a bit messy. So last night was just all about me being disciplined, sticking behind my boxing, getting behind my jab. I think I threw the jab more times last night than I have done in four or five fights put together. So that was my key last night, really.
Yeah, Archie, you know, you've got 21 wins now, 9 by KO. You've built up a great record. You know, you've got some good names on that record. You've been developing really, really well. But when's the time to go now? When do you see yourself? What's the roadmap for the next sort of like 12 months or so? You know, you've got some great champions out there. We saw Shekka Stevenson beating Jamal Herring for that IBF title. Oscar Valdez as well. It's a very strong division. When do you see yourself in the mix with them lot?
Very, very strong division. And to be honest with you, I'm very grateful and blessed with the team that I've got with MTK. And they're pushing me with the right fights, and they've kept me active. That was the main thing. After me breaking my arm and the COVID situation, I obviously won the WBO Global in July, and then they got me straight back out on the show last night. So it's the momentum's flying. I'm ready to rock and roll, really. So I just trust my team, and when they say the time is right, and it's, you know yourself, it's very political, this boxing game. So I'm ready to go whenever. I'll fight anyone tomorrow. Just got my team are guiding me in the right direction, and we are ready. We're knocking on that door now as we speak.
So you say you still want to develop, I'm hearing between the lines there, before moving up to full world level, yeah?
Listen, if they ring me tomorrow and say Shakur Stevenson fight is ready, I'm ready to go. It's no problem at all. I'm just, like I say, I'm just trusting the team. I'm very blessed that I'm keeping active. Hopefully we get out again in December. That's the plan. And yeah, like I said, I'm ready to go. I've been calling Shakur for a reason. The time is right now for me to go.
Well, he joined us earlier on. Beautiful. And this is what the WBO champion Shekka Stevenson said about you, Archie. take a listen to this. You can reply to him on social media afterwards.
I have to be honest, like when it comes down to like Archie Sharp, like I feel like there's a lot of Great Britain fighters that's better than him. Like I feel like there's a lot of people in England. What's the dude that went to the Olympics with me? He probably fight like 130. His name like
Joe Cordina.
Yeah, Cordina. He's better than Archie Sharp. Like it's literally like four or five fighters in England that I feel is better than Archie Sharp. Like I feel like Archie Sharp is more so like a waste of my time.
So does that get you motivated listening to that?
But to be fair, he's going to be saying these things, do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, I know my ability and I know, yeah, I can beat you, of course, Stevenson. And it's just down to it. That's his opinion, and he's entitled to what he wants to say. I was expecting a bit more worse than that, but obviously I'm on his radar because I know after his biggest win against Jamal Herring within 48 hours, he's posting pictures of me on social media. So there's obviously something. I'm in his mind. I know I'm in his mind, and I'll be pushing him in that corner until he takes that fight.
One of the things in that interview plays out later on the show, by the way, we recorded it with Shekka earlier. One of the things he did say, though, Archie, if you can get yourself into that position, is he's desperate to come and have a fight in the UK.
Exactly. There you go. There's the door open there. Look, I'm number two in the WBO world rankings, so all I've got to do is just keep winning and keep winning, and then hopefully I'll be mandatory very, very soon.
Well, that's the whole point. There is a system that you can push. So you want that fight. You're two fights away from it, in my view, if you can keep pushing to become mandatory.
Exactly that, and that's all I can do. Like I said, I've got a very, very good team, and we'll just keep winning. Just keep defending and keep winning, and then I'll push them in a corner where they've got to take the fight.
Sure, Archie, there's some good British fighters over here in this way. Actually, globally, there's some great fighters around at the moment. Do you see yourself needing another fight or two before you challenge for that world title and stepping up to maybe, you know, sort of like fringe world level just to prove yourself at that level before you make that big step again? Because there is a big gulf, isn't there, in like, you know, like sort of like campaigning at, say, European level to world level, you know, like that's a big jump. And at the moment, as you've already highlighted, there's some strong champions out there. So do you see yourself maybe another fight or two before you take that leap?
There's some great champions out there, and everyone has got to remember that Shakur Stevenson was an Olympian. I've beat Olympians through my career. Do you know what I mean? So I've been there. I've through the amateurs, I've mixed with the best, and I was the best. The thing is with me, I've just haven't had my opportunity to, as a professional, to showcase my ability. That's why I'm screaming for these fights, because I've been at this level through the amateurs. And now I've just got to do it as a pro. Everyone who knows me, I just haven't showcased it on that world in the professional side of things yet, because I haven't had that chance yet. I thrive on these fights. When you talk about Shakur Stevenson, Oscar Valdez, I thrive off them names because I know I'll bring my A game. No one's seen me in my A game. Last night, I got in the ring, I boxed 10 rounds, and I didn't even get out of second gear. I just got into that cruise mode. I was just hitting, not getting hit. I felt lovely today. It's a lovely payday for me. I feel beautiful today. I feel like I haven't even boxed. So I'm doing something right, hitting, like I said, displayed the art of boxing last night. And I know my ability, and you know, just about showcasing it. That's why I believe I'm ready for these fights. That you've got some great fighters out there now, like the McCormicks, who was in the Olympics. I even talk about Joe Cordino. There's some great fighters out there. And look, the McCormicks are on my resume, we're beating them in the amateurs. I've been showcasing my ability since day one, so I know I'm ready for that now.
Archie Sharp there reacting in the best possible way. Wow, is he up for a world title challenge in 2022. Well, the man himself, Shakur Stevenson, fresh off his victory over Jamal Herring to become a two-weight world champion and the WBO super featherweight champion. Join me next.
On Saturday night after your fight with Jamal Herring, I'd said it before the fight, but I said it afterwards as well. This could be the man headed for pound for pound number one in the next couple of years. And a couple of the older sage writers from America agree with me. What do you make of that, Mr. Stevenson?
I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody that feel that way. It's a lot more that I got to prove. This is just like the beginning, so I still got to stay focused.
Could it affect you with millions in the bank and you go all Hollywood on us?
Nah, not at all. I'm a family man. I come from a good family at the end of the day. And my mother taught me well. And I don't see me changing. Like, I am who I am, and I'm going to be who I am forever, so. At the end of the day, I'm still going to stick with who I am as a man.
You're still a very young man, but you've already achieved so much in the boxing ring, a two-weight world champion. And then last Saturday night, and I stayed up till the early hours to watch it, it was riveting. Some of us have called it a spite clinic. Obviously, you and Jamel are back together as friends again now, but you're not friends when you go in the ring, and I think your attitude was absolutely right. It was poise, precision, perfection, southpaw versus southpaw. You saw gaps in the door that people don't normally see. Your pop was there. It was a fantastic performance from the outside. How did you feel on the inside?
I felt like it was going to be that. Like, I watched his fights before I ended up fighting him. I watched his fights like the whole fight week. And being that I watched the fights the whole fight week, I kind of picked up on things that I seen that he didn't like, that he liked to do. I picked up on a lot of stuff. So I just went in the ring with that mindset. I went in the ring with the mindset that I'm a better fighter than he was. And I ended up proving it to him.
So you're there at 126 to 130 now, 130 pounds. Do you fight Oscar Valdez, the WBC champion, which we all think is a fantastic matchup as well? I think he's under the top rank banner as well, so it's not a difficult fight to make. So unification in a second weight division, is that where you're headed? Or Archie Sharp is number two, the British fighter. You've never fought a British fighter. You've got loads of fans over here. You know that they are massive boxing fans over here. Could you contemplate coming over here and fighting, say, an Archie Sharp?
I have to be honest, like, when it comes down to, like, Archie Sharp, like, I feel like there's a lot of Great Britain fighters that's better than him. Like, I feel like there's a lot of people in England. What's the dude that went to the Olympics with me? He probably fight, like, 130. His name, like...
Joe Cordina.
Yeah, Cordina. Yeah. He's better than Archie Sharp. Like, it's literally, like, four or five fighters in England that I feel is better than Archie Sharp. Like, I feel like Archie Sharp is more so, like, a waste of my time. Like, I feel like with an Archie Sharp, I feel like he got to go prove himself. Like, he got to show something. He never fought nobody. He haven't been in one real fight yet. He fight taxi drivers, and he's, like, barely getting by. Like, he's getting by a little bit. Like, I think he had, like, a majority decision with his sparring partner. And we got to be honest. Like, his sparring partner wasn't that good. But I think the sparring partner kind of beat him. Like, I think he kind of edged it. But at the end of the day, I feel like with him, he just got to prove himself more before I even, like, start saying his name in any type of way about a real fight with him. We want the Valdez. We want the Valdez, yeah. Right? We want that kind of route. We want to go unify the belts, and we want the bigger fight. So that's what we're looking towards. But I would love to come over to England and fight, because I love the support system, the fans. The environment, everything with them is just great. Like, the commentators, like, we watch their commentating, like, they actually know boxing. They pay attention to boxing. And I would love to actually come over there and fight.
Tell me about growing up a little bit. I mean, you're a fighter. I've seen you. I've been around you. You carry yourself a certain way. Like, you always look ready, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Have you grown up in that way, Shakur?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Like, I'm from the trenches at the end of the day. Like, we call it the trenches. I'm from the hood. We came up tough. We came up hard. It's, you know, regular stuff at the end of the day. But I feel like I know how to carry myself. I know how to switch it on and off at times. And I'm going to forever be who I am. But like I said, I'm doing this for, like, a certain reason. Like, I know it's kids that come from where I come from that don't get to see certain things that I'm doing right now. Like, they don't get to see, like, the part of life where outside of Newark and all that kind of stuff. So when I was a kid, boxing saved my life, to be honest with you. Like, that's how I feel. Like, when I was a kid, I didn't get to see nothing outside of Newark. I never got to see the world. I never got to see everything that was going on inside the world. I never got to see big old houses and all this stuff that's going on outside of Newark. Like, I never got to see that until I got to travel when it came to boxing, go overseas and go to different states and all that kind of stuff, and got to see the world. And like I said, it just get to see, like, a different part of the world. And with them kids, like, they don't get to see that. So coming back and hearing it from me and telling them, like, it's more to life than just North New Jersey, that takes a big role in their life. That makes them motivated and want to go do more. Like, it's kids who really want to box now, or they probably want to take basketball series or football series and all that kind of stuff. And they probably lock in and do extra more just because they want to be where Shakur Stevenson is at.
Forgive me for not knowing, but do you have any yet?
I got a daughter on the way. She'll be here December 9th.
Amazing. Congratulations. That will change your life, I will tell you.
Yeah, thank you.
And presumably, what if your daughter wanted to box when she grows up?
Never. Okay. Even if I got, like, after I have my daughter, if my next kid is a boy, I don't want my son boxing. Like, at the end of the day, I feel like it's a brutal sport. Like, it's cool for me to do it because I know, like, what I can do. And like I said, I feel like where I came from is, like, I was hungry. Like, I had to be hungry. Like, I feel like if I have a kid, they're not going to be born the same way. They're not going to be born into the same way I was living. Or they're not going to be as hungry. They're going to be able to get stuff. And I wouldn't want them boxing. Like, I don't feel like the hunger or the motivation going to be there as much as, like, it was for me.
Just this last thing. What was the day that you went to the gym? You say, like, it saved you. Can you remember the day you went to the gym, or you were encouraged to the gym and it changed you?
Okay, I remember the first day I went to the gym. I was 5 years old. It was in Newark, New Jersey. And I was a kid, though. I was tiny. And I went into the gym with my grandfather. And it was like people in there. I seen somebody in there sparring. I seen somebody hitting a double in. I seen a lot of people in there on a punching bag. Seen people in there jumping rope. And I was looking around, and it was like the coolest thing in the world to me, because it's like they were boxers. Like, I don't know what made it so cool to me. Like, it was just so cool. Like, I done seen football. I done seen basketball. You normally see that, but, like, you don't normally see boxing. Like, a lot of people don't know about boxing. So, when I went inside the gym, it was, like, it was amazing. Like, I just looked, and I went and asked my grandfather, can I have some gloves, and can I get in the ring? And he wouldn't let me. After that, every single day that he went to the gym, I started just going with him. And once I started going with him, probably when I was like 7 years old, he finally let me get in the ring and spar. 8, I finally had my first fight. And from there, it was just over. I just love the sport of boxing.
I love this attitude from Shaka Stevenson. You could really see him going to the number one pound-for-pound spot in the next couple of years if he continues his progress as he's doing at the moment. And also, of course, that step up to the lightweight division, which is such a scintillating division in the world at the moment, and so many great American rivals for him. Well, up next, Mauricio Sulaiman, the president of the World Boxing Council, joined me. He was on his way from Puerto Rico to Mexico, back to his home, but he had some salient things to say about the potential fight between Tyson Fury and Dillian White next, the interim heavyweight champion against the full champion, and also about women's boxing. Here's Mauricio.
En route to Mexico City from Puerto Rico. Sir, what are you doing in Puerto Rico?
We came here to meet the four presidents of the boxing organizations. The WBO had their executive meeting, so myself, I flew in as WBC, Darryl Peoples as IBF, Gilberto Mendoza Jr. as the WBA, and of course Paco as a host. We had a very positive meeting, and I'm very excited. I'm looking at things that are very good for the sport. Unity is much needed in all aspects. And I'm certain that these will come up with good plans for the future.
Do the gloves come off with you four guys ever or not?
They were never on. They were never on. It was a very friendly, respectful, all cards on the table meeting. So I'm very happy, very excited of things that we need to do, because as Pink Floyd says, together we stand, divided we fall.
Exactly. Just summarize for us what you can publicly, what the big changes the four of you would like to make together, or that you're putting forward, or, you know, just so that we can get an idea of what changes may come about with the four sanctioning bodies, Mauricio.
Well, basically, one of the keys is the goal of having unified champions, of having undisputed champions. The public always cries out loud, wishing to have one champion per division. So we have Josh Taylor right now, we have Teofimo Lopez, and Saturday there most likely will be a unified undisputed champion in the Canelo plant. There was a fight with Charlo and Castaño, which ended up in a draw, but it's a tendency. We want to see unified and one champion per division, but we have to address what happens with the mandatories. So we have ideas that we're working on to try, number one, to have unified champions, move towards unifications. Number two, how to address the mandatory situation of every division.
Obviously, we had the situation over here this week. Dillian White got injured, or last week, rather. The Otto Valen Dillian White interim title fight, WBC, was supposed to go ahead tonight. Right. Obviously, Chantel Cameron Mary McGee headlining instead at the O2 Arena. Brilliant to have women headlining. And White says, you know, he's 6 weeks out. Wallin and his promoter, Dimitri Salita, say, you know, really, by rights, they should reschedule and fight them. Fury and Sugar Hill and his team saying, yeah, Frank Warren, we're happy to fight Dillian White next if it's Dillian White, or the winner of White Wallin. Where does the WBC stand now on having ordered the winner of White Wallin to face the winner of Wilder Fury? We've got the winner of Wilder Fury with the Fury fight. How do we stand with the other, with the mandatory, or the interim title holder?
Well, the WBC order was very clear that the winner of Fury Wilder has 1 month to try to secure the ultimate unification against Usyk, who defeated Joshua. If they are not capable of doing such, then the WBC will go with a mandatory, which is the interim champion.
Yeah.
So we have received from the British Boxing Board of Control the medical certification that White could not fight Wallin because of an injury. So we are going to do what we publish, and that's the way we're moving forward.
So did you already say that the interim is the mandatory then? You've said that, have you then?
Yeah, we said that in the
clearly. Yeah. And just looking back now, the last time I saw you was in Las Vegas. It was fantastic for the international brigade to be together again. It means so much to be in the mecca of huge fight nights in Las Vegas together and break bread together. It's always amazing for us all to be together. What a fight between Fury and Wilder for the WBC heavyweight belt. It was worthy of one of the great events, wasn't it?
Oh my God. It's perhaps the best fight I have ever seen live in my life. It had all the elements, drama, power, the will, power to win by both going to the canvas. And it was just electric. It was electrifying. It was humbling to see Deontay Wilder so brave and so willing to do whatever he had to do to get his title back. That dramatic 10 round at the end of the round, when everything seemed that he was just going to go down. But that's boxing, and it was the heavyweight championship of the world. And the world now is excited about the heavyweights, about boxing, about the great fights being with public again after 2 years of suffering from uncertainty and depression and mental health. So it's a great time. It gave all of us a boost. Who we are in boxing or sports, he gave us just a great enthusiastic boost.
It was funny, you know, and earlier on today, just to let you know, I spoke to Sugar Hill Stewart, and he was saying to me, he was genuine that he and Tyson would happily go into Anthony Joshua's camp and help him to fight Usyk in the build-up, because they want the fight with him for the undisputed title, because they know that most of the fans in the world would love to see Fury against Joshua. It's just one of those fights that the world wants to see, you know?
Yeah, it's a heavyweight at its best. I'm very proud of Fury to be our champion. He represents the best as a WBC champion. He does a lot of charity work, and his family is beautiful. The loyalty that he shows with pride to be the WBC champion is humbling.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating stuff there from Mauricio Sulaiman. Well, I caught up with a Welshman after that, Liam Williams, who is being touted as the next opponent for Chris Eubank Jr. It hasn't been confirmed or wasn't confirmed when we did the Fight Night show, but it looks on the cards for December the 11th. Here's Liam Williams on what he'd like to do to Chris Eubank.
Still training under Dominic Ingle in Sheffield, still going home at the weekends to Wales, but presumably deep in camp.
To be honest, I'm told that the fight is very possibly happening on that date, but I haven't got full confirmation of that, but it seems to be a lot of rumours going around, so I think it's very likely. Just to clear that up, you know, so everybody don't take it for certain.
Are you saying the T's still need to be crosses and the I's dotted on the final contract for that fight then?
Yeah, mate, they do, yeah. I didn't really know how to answer that, if I'm being totally honest with you, because there is a lot of rumour, but I haven't had final word. I haven't heard it from the horse's mouth, if you know what I mean. So,
but it's a fight you want, presumably.
Oh, 100%, of course. As long as it can be finalised within the next couple of days, I'm guessing. You know, I think you and most other people know it. That's a fight which I want, probably the fight I want most, because there's been a lot of talk over the past, probably even going back 2 years. He's had his say, I've had mine, and all that's left to do now is to just see what happens, really, and you know, put an end to all the talking and see who the better man really is. So it's exciting.
Do you think you're going to bring something out of him that he hasn't shown in the last couple of fights? Because he hasn't had opponents who are right up there in terms of level, and he's been able to show shapes he's learnt with Roy Jones Jr. without being kind of really pressured.
Yeah, mate. I do think someone like myself will bring the best out of him, because I come to fight, I'm going to give him as good as he's going to give. Not just that, I think when he knows he's in a fight, that's like anyone else, really. I think it always brings the best out of you. You know, a little bit of nerves, a little bit of whatever. It always brings the dog out in you. And I think this is certainly the fight which should do that for him. And it's going to do the same for me. So it's going to be well worth every penny you pay for it.
From the Bubu Andrade fight, what have you taken on with you from that fight? What did you learn from that fight that you've taken into now, to the present?
Yeah, the Andrade fight was difficult for me, because he's a southpaw, he's long and rangy, he's got a very, very good skill set. He's got it all, really. He's a very, very good fighter, so massive credit to him. And I don't feel like I turned up. The best Liam Williams didn't show up that night. You know, I didn't put in a bad performance, I don't believe, but I could have done more. I had a bit of a bad start. They obviously got dropped in the second. And I haven't really talked much about this, but I was carrying a shoulder injury going into that fight as well. Even going back to, like, sparring sessions, sometimes it takes me 2, 3, even 4 rounds to get going sometimes. And you know, really, really pumping the jab out and backing someone up. And it would take me a good couple of rounds to get going. But, you know, no excuses. I lost the fight to the better man. It's as simple as that, really. I know I lost, but I also learned a lot too. So I have no regrets. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to be sat here world champion right now, but I'm not. That's life. And it goes on. So, you know, we'll keep pushing forward. And hopefully in the near future, we will become world champion. But first of all, we have to deal with Eubank and put him out of his misery first.
It's funny, because the last time we spoke, you spoke brilliantly as well, Liam. I want to finish this interview on this. You know, you said, God, if I'd known myself, if I look back on myself now when I was 13 to 15, that age, I was a little wouldn't have liked myself. Are you still enjoying passing on being a role model and showing people, youngsters, that you can live a certain way and you can change your life by sacrificing whatever you do? For sacrificing yourself to whatever it is you do and fully committing to it.
Yeah, 100%, mate. To me, I've actually got like a bit of a tingle going on. It's if I'm being totally honest with you, I was a little and I was always getting myself into bits of bother. Nothing extreme, but you know, I was never good in school or anything like that. And it's just goes to show that if you really want something, you work hard towards it, then who's to tell you can't do it? I used to be in school. I'd have teachers like saying to me, Liam, you're not going to become anything because you don't focus. You don't, you know, you're misbehaving all the time, this and that. But you know, if school ain't for you, then it ain't for you, just like it wasn't for me. And you just need to focus on what it is you do like and push forward with that. I only have to go to Asda in Donovandy, and I get kids come up to me and ask me for photos and stuff. And again, like, I have to pinch myself because, you know, I am a big, as much as I don't look at myself in that way, you know, it's amazing because I am a role model for these kids.
Well, that was Liam Williams there talking up his fight coming up hopefully on December the 11th against Chris Eubank Jr. Well, from the men to the women, I was joined by Susanna Schofield, OBE, who has taken her life from being an incredibly successful businesswoman into becoming a boxing promoter. Her first event is going to be on November the 26th in Sheffield, an all-women card. Unified Promotions is the name of her company. It's going to be a fascinating launch. Will Susanna join me to talk all about it?
Great news that the first ever all-female boxing card is about to take place, I understand, Susanna, on November the 26th in Sheffield. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And yes, very exciting. We're there. It's filmed, we've got the card, and we're good to go. And as you say, 26th of November. So I'm delighted to be able to be part of this.
Obviously, earlier in the year, you came out and said, I'm getting fully involved in this. I want to canonically change it for women. I want to create a career for them. You know, I want to make the changes in women's boxing that aren't being made for women from the men's side, if you like. How tough has it been through the year, obviously with COVID still ongoing, to get this first card out on November the 26th in Sheffield?
Well, strangely, Gareth, and it's an interesting thing, because I think COVID actually helped women's boxing. And as bizarre as that sounds, there was always the argument that women's boxing didn't sell tickets. And boxing's always been about putting bums on seats. Mm. But in lockdown, actually, it wasn't about putting bums on seats. So some women got the undercards. And actually, some of those fights were incredible. We saw some amazing fights through COVID. And I think really, actually, it started people saying, do you know what, boxing, women's boxing has got a place. And there's always, and I fight in a juxtaposition whether I want to say it's women's boxing or it's just boxing and it just happens to be a woman. And I get torn between that because I want to champion women's boxing, but actually it is just still boxing because I think the two fights, whether you're watching two men that are equally matched go at each other or two women that are equally matched, it's as good a sport as it is, you know, irrelevant of gender. So I kind of sit in there, yes, I want to champion it, but in the same aspect, I long for the day we just refer to it as boxing and it's almost gender irrelevant.
But given that women fight two-minute rounds and that, you know, there is, it's 10 rounds in championship boxing, there are still distinct differences between the men's and the women's side, you know. And annoyingly, women still wear head guards in amateur boxing where men don't now, which is very odd in the Olympics, for example. It's still very odd there.
It is, and I think there's. If I'm honest, I think there's a bit of research that needs to be done now. And part of what Unified Promotions will do, which is the company I own, is that we'll start to look at that. So actually, there are some statistics that say women dehydrate much quicker than men because of our breast tissue. So actually, it's important we only do 2-minute rounds because we need to rehydrate. But let's not kind of, you know, surmise that. Let's actually get some fact behind it. So part of the stuff we're looking at now is actually testing that and working with the women as we train them up for this fight. We're documenting all of that leading up to the 26th of November and really put some hard facts around it. You know, is the belt the right height? You know, it's all the silly things, isn't it? It's to protect your crown jewels, but actually it's a really bad place for women's ovaries. So now, you know, first Olympics 2012, we're less than a decade into really recognise women's boxing in the UK. Let's get some stats around this. So if they could fight 3 minutes, maybe some choose to, maybe some don't. But actually, if there's medical reasons why it's two, let's keep it at two. But that safeguarding element is where I think that's been missing in women's boxing. It's not necessarily just about championing and saying, yes, they're great, they need to be on TV and we need to champ. Actually, how do we really process that through and make sure that there's some safeguarding measures put around it as well?
Tell me, I mean, because I spoke to Mauricio Suleiman this week for the show, and he was saying that there's for them, the WBC president, that there's still physiologically, there are differences between men and women. So until that medical evidence does change, they will keep it at 2 minutes in WBC fights sanctioned by them. So that's, I mean, that's a great thing. It's in your corner now to, like, if that medical evidence shows that it doesn't affect women over 3 minutes, then all to the good.
Yeah, the opportunity's there. But I think it's about the safeguarding, isn't it? And I agree. I think until there's the evidence there, we shouldn't respond and react. And I think that's so important. And I think from my perspective, it's how do we put this sport really on an equal playing field? So as I said earlier, it's not just about men or women, it's about boxing. And there's not that narrative that's different. It is just about amazing people with amazing careers. But the trouble is until that really gets the eyeballs on it, then there's not the money in it. So most female boxers have to work. So therefore, it's only the really top end that get to take it completely professionally. And if you go about, like, you'll know, Gareth, I have a foot in the football camp as well. So if you look at women's football, that's only really starting to gain momentum now, because actually there's enough money behind it that those female footballers only have to play football. And if you have a sport that's all you have to do to train in, of course you're going to be better. Whereas if you're pulling a full-time job and doing it as a hobby, it's only ever going to be a hobby. So I think the more we can get eyeballs on it, the more we can get equal money into it, and the more we can get, you know, that narrative going around it, then the better the fights will become.
So Christine O'Hara McCafferty, Paige Goodyear, Lauren Parker, and I don't know if I say her name right. Khadija Tamara. These are all signed already for the card.
All signed already. So we're just matchmaking them the other side. So these girls are definitely all fighting. And then we're just looking for the right people for them to fight. We've obviously got contracts in negotiation at the moment. But yeah, the one thing that's important to me is that it's a good matchmake. You know, I want these girls to be pushed. Lauren Parker is absolutely incredible and ready to go. Christine has obviously had a phenomenal track record already in Ireland and has an amazing following.
Commonwealth Games. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And she did incredibly well there. Paige, again, absolutely ready to go and has just turned professional. So this is her first fight, but she's done so well in the amateur. And Khadija's interesting. So she's from Senegal. So she's got that moment of actually having to travel over for here. Probably not allowed to really fight in our home country. Absolutely not embraced as a female boxer. But this is the platform. She's also an ambassador for UEFA. Does a whole load of things around women being able to be in sport. So I think as a card, we have a lovely group of girls there who are really focused. And, you know, Gareth, we've talked before about all women who fight for a reason. And they do. There's always a story. And these four women have an amazing story. And from the 1st of November, we'll start to push that story out through Unified and through the social channels. And I'm just hoping that it's enough of a narrative that people get behind them and really want to support them coming forward, because they're four amazing women who, you know, who don't get to just turn off in the day job and just concentrate on boxing. They've got other stuff that they have to focus on too, but ultimately they're there and ready to go.
Well, from talking about women's boxing to a formidable world champion, Michaela Mayer, who defends her world title in a unification with Maeve Hamaducci next Friday night at the Virgin Hotel, Las Vegas. Yeah, women are totally to the fore at the moment. She's headlining a top-ranked card in Las Vegas, and she is delighted about it. Real character, and of course, maybe destined to fight our very own Terry Harper in the coming year. Here's Michaela, all for you.
It must be great. November the 5th, Maeve Hamaducci, you've got a unification fight. I think it's the first time a woman's fight, maybe unification fight, has headlined an ESPN card. So you're making history again. I know you've been doing commentary. Are the facets, all these facets of women's boxing, without, before going on to specifically yourself, are these facets of women's boxing a kind of a delight for you, that they're all history making?
Yeah, this is great. I mean, this is a really amazing time for women's boxing, and I'm happy to be a part of it. You have a handful of girls that are getting primetime spots. I mean, not enough. We still have a long way to go, but, you know, you have some girls that are getting some great cards, great TV time. A handful of us are doing commentary too. You know, you have Sunisa Estrada, Franchon Cruz, So it's a really great time for women's boxing. I think we still have a ways to go, especially here in America. I think the UK is doing a lot better when it comes to, you know, accepting the women into the sport. But yeah, we're on a mission.
Do you feel the history of this event coming up on November the 5th?
Yes, this is definitely, I definitely recognize the importance of this fight. And I said this in my last interview, but it's almost like everything that I've done up to this fight means nothing unless I perform and come out with the win, because this is everything that I've been working towards, what I've asked for, right? I've been saying I want the best in the division. I've been saying I want to unify. Now the Ring Magazine belt is on the line also. So there's just a lot at stake, and I'm aware of that.
This is a great fight for you because I don't know how many defenses she's made already of her title. Like it's four or five, isn't it? You know, she's right up, might be six even, she's right up there. You're both coming into the peak of your powers. Super featherweight for women is an amazing division. Tell us what you know about Hamaduchi. Obviously, she's boxing out of France. Give us a taste of what you're expecting to do to her on November the 5th.
Well, studying her is really not that complicated, right? She has a very obvious style and it's obvious what she likes to do, and that's come forward. It's not like she has any fancy footwork or, slick combinations or anything. She's very straightforward, but it doesn't mean to say that it's not a difficult style to fight, because although coming up with the game plan was pretty straightforward, staying disciplined under that pressure and being conditioned enough to withstand that pressure for an entire fight, that's where the tough part comes in. That's where the hard training comes in. And we're not oblivious to that. Like, we're not in denial of that. We know exactly that is going to be hard, and we've trained for that. And so that's the number one thing, is being well conditioned and staying disciplined for those whole 10 rounds.
I spoke to Clarissa Shields the week before last, and you know, there's a big fight at middleweight building between she and Savannah Marshall here. They're both going to be on the same London card on December the 11th. And hopefully we'll have a women's super fight here kind of March, April next year, maybe up north with 15, hopefully 20,000 people at the event with the girls headlining, the ladies headlining. What does it mean to you that it's, I know it's the old Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, isn't it? It's called the Virgin Hotel now. But what does it mean to you to headline in Las Vegas, Sin City itself? And Clarissa was saying, for that fight with Savannah, could they mark it by having 3-minute rounds? You know, I don't know what you think about that now, where that we should be perhaps making that shift for that extra minute in each round for women to work more in the discrete units that rounds are.
Yeah, well, to answer your first question, definitely an amazing time in my career to be headlining on a top ranked card on ESPN. I mean,
in Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas. And just for them, after, you know, 15 fights and working my ass off to try and just prove that I was worth their investment and that women belong on this big stage, for them to give me a main event fight in Vegas. And it just sort of shows that, like, you know, I've done well, and that they believe in me, and that they're proud of me, and that they believe that I am worthy. And so that's just great to have that support from a promoter like Top Rank and a network like ESPN and a city like Vegas. So it's definitely a huge deal. Second part, the 3-minute rounds, I originally was like, okay, why are we going to keep pushing for more? Women are always pushing to do more for less. Why are we going to do that? And then I thought, well, you know, that is just sort of the duty of this era of women. Like, we have the ones to push and push, and we're never going to get really fully what we deserve. Maybe the generation after us, the generation after them, will finally get what they deserve. The pay gap will get closed, et cetera. But we're never going to get that. And so I have to sort of just know that, and my decisions that I make maybe have to be for the better of the sport and not just for myself. And so now my ideas changed and said, well, maybe we push for 3-minute rounds, that'll start to close that pay gap and maybe start the conversation of you know, women gaining more respect and more equality in the sport. Mm. Not overnight, but it starts with women like us, me and Clarissa, who have the platform and are at this level to sort of speak up and try and make it happen.
And what are you predicting? A convincing points decision, a stoppage victory, an all-out war, a Hagler Hearns, a Wilder Fury 3? What are you predicting?
I want to stop Hamadouche, and I believe I can, because with the combination of her rushing forward the way she does and me having really worked on sitting on my punches, I don't think that she's going to be able to get away from some of my big shots. And not just the head shots, but I've been really working on digging down to the body, and someone like Hamadouche can take shots to the head all day. And so I've been working on mixing that up, I want the win. That's the most important thing. But I really, really want to make a statement in this fight, and I want to hurt Hamadouche. I would love a stoppage.
Well, that's it this week for the Fight Night podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and listen every week. In fact, next week, we are live from Liverpool for the Boxer event. Commentary from Alex Steedman and Spencer Oliver. Myself and Adi Adelipo will be running things from HQ on the night. Zach Parker's in action as well, of course, in Birmingham. You've been listening to the Fight Night podcast. I'm Gareth A. Davis.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.